it's back.
Number one, straight up, top of the list, no questions asked, Cora Staunton.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Look, Casey.
Yeah.
How are you going to get over Casey?
All this week on Off the Ball Breakfast.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is The Hurling Pod. It is another break week. We get a week off, week of games, get a bit excited, then it stops again. Then we get another week. At least we got two together after this, all concluding on St. Patrick's weekend. Not sure exactly what James Gale has gone to grab. It could be notes. It could be a laptop. I'm not sure. James Gale, what are you up to in the background there?
I'm actually trying to foolproof my pod station against myself for knocking the glass. So I'm trying to move all cables, move pads, move everything, so that if in the event I do catch the speaker again, there shall be no collateral damage. And no foul language.
What I'm going to do, well, I don't mind the foul language too much. I think everyone was pretty entertained by it last week. And if you look at the YouTube, the boys of Cracky the Ash managed to do a timestamp of the perfect moment just to capture you as you went into your rant. And also they did a wonderful edit which had Davy Fitz pucking a ball. And that was the reason that your glass came down.
Yeah. You know, them guys are so on the pulse. I think they work for Off the Ball. They have insider, they have insider information. They get that so quick. Like, they do not miss a beat. I swear to God. I think there are multiple people.
It's more than one person, or it's someone who's a very, very quick and impressive video editor who turned it around that quickly. Because I think I just put the clip up, and by the time I went to check my notifications, they had the video made. So, yeah. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is, I keep on seeing these ads on Instagram for these things where you can put your drink in and it kind of auto-balances. So I'm thinking of getting you one of them that you can put in the seat beside you. And therefore, if you do hit it, the glass isn't going to break.
I bet you do it. I have one already.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was trying to locate it today. And do you think I could find it?
No.
So I know I have one because I got one for Gogglebox. Something very similar happened during my Gogglebox days. Only that was, I spilled a can of Guinness. Only, so they got these cup holder things that go over the armrest. Fabulous yoke. Mm. And it's foolproof for a fool like me, but I can't find it. I'd say one of the kids has gone and set up in some dollhouse. I don't know. So I'll have to go with what I have now, lads.
Forgive me, Paul Murphy, on this one. Hello, Paul. How are things?
How are we doing, lads?
Before I go any further, what's your worst experience on Gogglebox then?
What's my worst experience?
Yeah, what was your worst experience?
Hmm.
We've never actually delved into it. I think this is
right.
This is ripe for conversation, and we never really went there before.
So let me see. Probably the first episode, right? Genuinely, like, you know, my terminology of the human anatomy wouldn't be great, like, right? So there was this, the very kind of first clip or two, like, and they were teaching children, you know, young children. I didn't expect they'd be learning the words they were learning, right? So they're probably in junior infants or first class, and they started going on about a vulva, right? And I was like, to the wife, I said, what's a vulva? You know? And she looks at me with this real, you know, disappointed face as if I'd no idea. And I genuinely hadn't a clue what a vulva was, right?
These were children. How young were these children finding out about
vagina? I'm going to say they must have been 6 or 7.
Bloody hell.
But there was obviously pictograms of the human anatomy, and they were going about the vulva and this crack. And then after that, they went on about the male side of things. And I went, oh, shit, that's going to be in the clip, right? So first clip comes out, and here's big lad Jim going, what's a vulva? And I got... I got bit online, at work, everywhere. Do you not know what a vulva is? I'm like, I obviously fucking don't if I ask the question. Then we got off air and Grace goes, you'd have to let the side down so badly. Like, look at terminology. I don't know. Like, there's different names for everything. But yeah, that was a bad experience, in fairness. That was a tricky one. That was the first episode.
What a way to start. Like, we are peeling the curtain back ever so slightly here, but how long are the actual recording sessions for this? Because I often wondered, obviously, like, it cuts together nicely where you've got multiple families responding to the same thing. Is the case of, like, they throw a load of clips up, or do you have to watch lengthy amounts of the episodes?
No, so they'll play. So what they do is they come in, the crew sets up, and they will play about... So they're in your house for 4 hours, right? So there's about maybe half an hour to 40 minutes of an actual setup where they set up the screen, the set, and they come and do your house beforehand, let's say, when you're applying into Gogglebox, whatever you want to call it, and they find the best angle for your couch. So they come in and they do all that setup. Then they play three intervals of clips that are about maybe an hour, you know, with different clips, and they tell you, right, here's going to be 10 minutes. And you watch the 10 minutes and you react. Mm-hmm. And then there's another couple of clips. So they show the same clips to each family. then you'll have a break, change t-shirts, change clothes, come down again. So it looks like there's multiple days of clips and watching television. So it looks like you're behind the TV all day, all night, and you're watching multiple episodes and stuff. And then they piece it together and release it out. So it was 11 weeks. And all in all, they're in your house about 5 hours between setup, going through the clips, and then breakdown. It's about 5 hours. But the crew are deadly. They're very, they're kind of seamless. You wouldn't even know they're there. And they're, the clips, like they'd never forewarn you. They'd never give you an idea. I'd always be trying, after week one with the vulva incident, I was trying to just tap them up. What's coming this week? Give me an idea what's coming. If Anthony Afield is out, I'm in the country of East Galway. If Anthony is beyond my, general experience, please tell me so I can. And they didn't tell me. And then the next episode two was a heap of male black strippers. And they show everything. They're like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting this. You know what I mean? So like, what the fuck is going on? So that was week two, but then it progressively got easier as the weeks went on.
Sounds like the lads at the Devonish there from a few weeks ago who went viral online. Maybe that's a clip you might have to watch this time around. Like, the only thing is, I would wonder if they were showing me the clip, Skell, if I would feel under pressure to respond to it in a certain way, whereby, you know what I mean, as in, because you know it's clips there, it's very different to the impression you're meant to be giving the viewer is that you're passively sitting down, the two of you watching this, and this is just a natural reaction you have, and everyone's having a laugh and whatever. If I saw the clips coming up, I'd be thinking, I got to kind of perform here to a certain extent.
Well, Grace and I, let's say, naturally, like we'd be commentating on television a good bit, you know what I mean? We could converse an awful lot back and forth. It's just the way we operate. But the very first couple of weeks, I was kind of similar to the podcast last year. I was conscious of, because of television, language, excessive action, whatever. But then as you got to like week four or five, I just said, I don't care anymore. It's like Ricky Gervais and the Golden Globes. I don't care. Fifth time, whatever. I don't care. It's like, so then I just started being natural and the language started flowing. And signs wrong, we haven't been asked back.
I was wondering at what point you were actually watching your language on this podcast, because you came out of the traps pretty quickly last year, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, in year one, I was trying to be as best I could, and I ended up going bad. Then Mammy Scahill was given out to me for letting the side down. In year two, when you're kind of overly conscious about something, you subconsciously use it too much. Okay. And now I'm at the stage where I just, look, it is what it is. If you don't like it, stuff it. Sorry, that's
stuff it.
Stuff it, yeah. Like, sorry. Not sorry. Simple as that.
I don't know. Murph, we're missing out because during the week, I was having a look at the YouTube was busy on the comments side last week, I would say. And the one that I was kind of surprised by came in from, I'm going to get the name right in this one when I look over the camera. It was Patrick Cormall 7754, who said, and five people so far have agreed with this, you should have your own TV show. So, again, I'm not sure if Patrick is the best sounding board for this, Murph, but certainly, if anyone's watching in the TV world, I think we're open to this, aren't we?
Maybe not a Gogglebox type format, certainly not, but something a little cosier than that now. Off, maybe not watching other things. Our own setup. I presume that's what he's talking about. Obviously,
I would presume so. I mean, look, yeah. GAA, I believe, are doing a football program during the championship, which is going to be midweek. Like, maybe we can fill the hole that is the hurling championship. Bring us in midweek.
I do believe as well, lads, that having experienced the 2E with a few sociable pintings, we would make for great television.
I'm not sure them giving us a load of beer, Skell, is exactly.
I didn't say load, William. I just said a couple. I was really sweet just to get us going. You know what I mean?
Get the juices flowing, yeah.
Yes, you wouldn't know how to be in the cup of tea.
Well, that's a fair point. It's up to TV producers. We are open to offers. How's about that? By the way, this is the Hurling Pod, not the Gogglebox Pod. It is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. And within the weeds of the comments, here we go. Some other things that came up from last week. This one came in from Niall 3795. Couldn't get Niall 1. Sought out the video after listening to the pod. Good man, Skell. 45 minutes in, he goes full Stone Cold entrance music. Do you get that reference, Skell?
I was a WWE fan growing up.
Ah, perfect.
Stone Cold, the Texas Rattlesnake was my guy. So I was very happy to contribute, albeit unintentional.
So I
did watch the clip, and I have to say, Murph, your reaction got me. You know when someone laughs, right? When you laugh, I was laughing at me breaking the glass, obviously. So I watched it a few times, and I just said, I couldn't stop laughing because you're like, what the hell happened? Will, you were in an element of shock.
I was really surprised, because what happened was I had actually flicked to the other tab because I was having a quick look at, I think, like, were we going through comments or something at the time as well, I think, similarly to last week.
I think we were talking about Lee Chin, yeah.
Yeah, and then all I could hear was just the glass smash. I was there going, tell me that wasn't a glass that just smashed, and tell me that's just a noise from his phone or something. And then I clicked back in and saw it, and I was like, oh, Christ. It was a beautiful organic moment.
Organic, yeah, that's the trouble. I didn't want it. I hope it's avoidable, but hey. The evidence is actually still here. The towel is still on the ground. The brush is still there. I haven't moved it.
I hope all the glass is gone at least before you move around.
It's not. That's... Jeez, look at this.
Ah, lads.
Yeah, little tiny piece.
Nice. You have a job to do once we finish off on this pod. Scroll through, I'm keeping the serious ones until later because there are actually questions that are meaningful as opposed to just kind of observations. But Joseph Ryan 5949 on the YouTube last week, I propose a 1 week suspension for Mr. Skell. Presumably that was because he broke the glass or because he swore, as opposed to just wanting to get him off the pod. So they were the kind of glasses based ones. Generally, people had a good laugh looking at that clip and the timestamp once they'd seen it. But Murph, you can possibly take this one, which comes in from Paul O'Sullivan 5145. Hi lads, love the pod. Quick question, how come Cork get so much criticism in the media for nearly letting Waterford back in last week when nothing was said about Kilkenny nearly having a bigger collapse the week before against Cork?
Ooh, collapse.
Did the media go very hard on Cork for collapsing against, well, from what I saw, I thought people kind of gave credit to Waterford for rallying back. You know, it felt like it was a bit more of a rally. I would agree that Kilkenny left the door open for Cork to an extent. You know, like, Cork seemed to be going into a phase where they were going to try and see out the game. But Waterford raised their game and came back at them. Now, Waterford's game plan was a little bit frantic, but just a few more things came together in the second half once they got the momentum. And I think people gave a lot of credit to Waterford for rallying. Yeah, but I would say, in fairness, and I think Derek Ling even said it the week previous, that they weren't overly happy with, you know, the lead they gained against Cork, and then they kind of let Cork back into it. So, yeah, to be fair, like, but also I wouldn't say the media were overly hard on Kilkenny either, you know. I would say that most of the time when we kind of notice these things, you're probably from the county and you're probably a bit more sensitive to actually copping that when people are, you know, maybe being a bit more hard in your county. But anywhere I saw last week, it was actually people saying, you know, well, fair play to Waterford, because a few of the Waterford performances we've seen over the last, you know, year or two have been kind of, you know, when they are down, they see out the game, they maybe maintain the margin between the opposition team, but they don't really rally back. So I wouldn't say, from anything I saw, I thought it was fairly balanced, to be honest, the reaction between Cork and Waterford. I don't think it was overly biased or hard on Cork.
Yeah, I don't think we were particularly harsh. Again, I realise there are other podcasts and media available where people may well have seen that Cork were getting hammered on it. The thing is, Skell, I wonder about these narratives as well. So maybe the reason it seemed that people were harder on Cork the week just gone by was obviously they were very aware by the rally that they had produced. So there seems to be this kind of idea out there at the moment that it's like, and it's former Cork players have brought this up over the last couple of weeks. It's like, when are we going to see a complete Cork performance that isn't just a case of they're in a position where it looks like the game is lost, then they rally and play really well, or they play really well, get into a winning position against Waterford and nearly squander it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that's more the feel of criticism rather than us criticising the individual performance last week against Waterford.
Yeah, I do. I think you're right in terms of narrative. I think certain narratives are tagged towards certain counties, if you know what I mean. And well, one of them with Cork is obviously the type of performance they can produce is not often produced enough. And like when they show signs of it in games, there's only like a little thing would throw them off. You could, like, I've used the word with limit before, bullying. And if someone turns up the heat or changes the game plan in game, that they're not able to react to it in game. But like that now, there's certain narratives that are fancy. So like with regards to Galway, you can use the whole underage thing and success. Cork is that now, let's say, clear that they're too focused on Limerick at this stage. You know, you can use all these types of narratives, but I don't think they performed overly bad. Yeah, look, they relinquished a large lead, but they played, you know, like a progressive game of hurling, and they played it for the vast majority of the game, you know, and they didn't have their full 15 out, if you ask me, and they did enough to win. That's a different story if they got clawed back and lost. You know what I mean? I just think maybe members of the media are looking for topics of discussion, if you like. But if they did get clawed back and did get beaten, that's probably a different story for me with the same people they had on the pitch. But they made substitutions. They introduced some new players, thinking of the keeper and the cornerback. So it's not as if that they went out full force against Waterford's full team, blitzed them, and then, you know, got relinquished the lead. I think they worked on some things with personnel and with system, but they came away from the game certainly with things to do, as every team does in the league. And like, if you look at most games in the league, between the top teams, you could say, yeah, each of them have had periods where they've relinquished leads or chased down leads. I don't think it's a major narrative. And look, is it a topic for concern at Cork? I wouldn't say overly concerned, something to keep the eye on, but not topic concern with.
Well, look, guilty as charged. You're always looking for these things to talk about, particularly this time of year. And so therefore, you find this thing you can kind of tease out a little bit and it makes something for a conversation. And again, where you don't have a run of matches happening week after week after week after week, it's not like we've got matches this week to sit down and talk about. And
Does that happen, let's say, when, you know, that, like a situation right now where the league hasn't been overly exciting, to be honest, that you'd actually actively try to source out, I wouldn't call it storylines, but areas to investigate, if you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I think you probably have to. I mean, like, if you sit down in a production meeting, again, you can talk about what happens behind the scenes in Gogglebox, but, like, if you're sitting down for a radio programme, and I'm sure it's the same for a TV programme, like, say on League Sunday, where they will be looking for probably two or three things that they can actually explore in the time that they have. Again, if you were getting ready for a radio show, like, say if we were sitting down with Nash on Friday, we didn't have Anthony last Friday because it was going into a week without games been on. But definitely as a group, like three or four of us will probably sit down and look at some of the kind of main things that happened the week before. I'm not saying you're necessarily trying to create a narrative, but you'd definitely be trying to pick something out that potentially you could tease or maybe make into a wider discussion, because otherwise it'd be pretty boring if you were just sitting down going, right, last weekend Team X beat Team Y by this amount, and this is why I think about Team X at this point. Like, I think our podcast would be a lot more boring if that's all we did.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, to be fair, a part of the narrative with Cork this week, it wasn't a standalone performance against Waterford. I think it was more the fact that the three games, when you put them together, okay, they were beaten by Clare, Up in Ennis, but you know, there was a point that came out of that game where they said, like, the first 10-15 minutes of the second half, they basically handed the game to Clare. Like, you know, Clare just completely took off there. Against Kilkenny gained a huge lead on them. Okay, Cork came back at them, but Kilkenny won. And then they almost, you know, three games where, you know, Cork could very well go out and win all three of those games. They almost gave the victory. So I think that's what created the conversation around that, was that they almost then had no points on the board. You know, they sort of scenario that maybe like last year where everybody was saying how well Cork played but didn't get out of Munster. So maybe it was just that this kind of question mark over them, because I think people are actually being very positive about Cork at the moment, and it's kind of hard not to be in many ways. But when the results maybe don't match up to the expectation, I think, look, as the case is with any team, that's where the conversation starts. And I think as well, doubled up with, like you were saying there, you know, we're going into a break week. Was there any huge points that came out of last weekend? Not really. We spoke about it last week as well, saying that somebody asked a question, what's the big learning so far in the league? And we actually struggled to try and go, well, what is it like, you know? So, like, I mean, sometimes you do have to try and create the conversation here. Maybe that was one of the points from the media last week.
Yeah, look, for anyone who doesn't get the members pod from last week, we kind of did our assessment and went, it's been reasonably meh so far for the first few rounds of the league. We're kind of still waiting for something to ignite, and also at the same point almost acknowledging that, you know what, actually the championship is now right over the horizon, and realistically that is the point is, I think the top teams all want to be in 1A for next year where possible. Mm-hmm. So that's become more important, I think, than even getting to the semi-finals of the league or the final of the league, because of the way that the season runs at the moment. You just want to make sure you're in those 1A positions. And as a result, I don't think teams have been going at the league all that hard. And we've had results that we kind of expected for the best part across the board within the league. Mm. Some teams have been more interested than others. Like, I saw some Wexford fans were saying last week that, not necessarily us, but generally maybe that Wexford aren't getting a fair shake because of what they've done so far. The fact that they are unbeaten to this point, the fact that they are introducing new players, and maybe the talk is, as we had last week, about the fact that their free takers had to rotate so much when Lee Chin was off the pitch. I think if I was a Wexford fan, Skell, I'd be more than happy if that was the case. I'd love to be going, you know what, actually, it looks like the style of hurling is moving along nicely. You know, roster knows what he's doing. They're finding some young players along the way. Let's go in under the radar and come into the Leinster Championship, as opposed to thinking, you know what, after a couple of rounds of the league, the national media aren't talking about us enough.
Yeah, and like, you're a sophomore as a player, like, you like to go in and go about your business quietly. You don't want too much row about it, because it just brings unnecessary, you know, as a talk about you. You're under the spotlight from elements of the media, and it can just sometimes it can, you know, maybe have a snowball effect. But they're going about business quietly. You know, granted, we've seen from Wexford in the past whereby they fly into leagues, they come in very, very fit. You know, they're blowing teams out of the water, let's say, in the months of February, March, and then sometimes in the kind of die off in April, May, June, etc. Yeah, my hope for this team is that obviously, you know, for them is that they're competitive in the championship and they don't die off. Like, I'd like to see Rossiter do well. You know, I want to see Jerry Egan do well as well. But if they need to be consistent in terms of performance, so it's grand, you know, getting a draw against a very good team in Clare. But they need to start growing now. So, and not looking at results as if, yeah, that was a great result. You know, use it as a platform and keep moving. And if they keep producing these results, you know, heading into the months of March and April, then you nearly become a believer. But right now, I'm looking at it with a kind of a small degree of scepticism, saying, I've seen this movie before. You know what I mean? I've seen this movie before. And then when it comes to Leinster Championship, it's just been, as you were said, well, meh. Do you know what I mean? So it's like they haven't had an overly successful run with what you probably class in Wexford as a very, very good generation of players, probably the best generation they've had, you know, truthfully going back 20 years, maybe more. Mm. So did they get enough out of those players of that group? Chances are they didn't. Maybe it coincided with obviously having good Kilkenny and Galway teams in their provincial championship. But for them to move forward now, they need to introduce the youth in conjunction with having a new manager and just remain consistent. If they do that, that's not a bad year, lads. You know.
Yeah, look, I'm obviously taking a bit of Wexford flack because of the almost oversight that happened a couple of weeks ago on the...
What was that, Will?
The almost oversight.
At the end of the day, you didn't correct it. It was us that corrected it for you, so it was oversight.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It would have been a far more awkward conversation if we'd actually got to the pod and I'd gone, oh, yeah. Shit.
Murph, when's your birthday?
Why do you want to know that?
Just answer the question. When's your birthday?
It's gone, 27th of January.
Oh, you stuck away with that one.
You owed him a gift. For him, yeah. Saving you.
I owe him a pint on the last week of January next year. How's about that? But yeah, I'm a little bit more optimistic about Wexford. But I will admit the reason that I'm slightly more optimistic is based upon a certain hypothetical here, which is that you look at what they've achieved so far without a string of frontline players who still have to come back in. It all hinges on the fact that those players come back in and everything keeps motoring in the right direction. They all stay fit. Everything clicks once they get back into the team as well. At the moment, I'm seeing it as, yeah, Wexford have started well. There's a lot of green shoots and interesting things happening there. But for Wexford to kick on, you need to get those players back fit and firing. And again, they've now been hit by another injury, Murph, with the fact that it looks like Lee Chin's league campaign is going to be over. So he's picked up a hamstring knock. We were wondering when Rosser had said last week, he knows his own body and he goes off. He obviously must have felt a twinge in his leg. If it is a hamstring that's going to end the league campaign for him, again, this is one of those where you think Lee is just getting back going again. You know, he's leading the side this year. And now his year is going to be a bit broken up by probably missing the tail end of the league and maybe even the start of the championship if this is a hamstring strain.
But I think for the Waterford players, I mean, keep roster aside, shouldn't have to instill this message into them. But they should be kind of looking at it going, we should be able to operate without Lee Chin. You know, any good team, any team that hopes to compete should be able to compete without the big player. Now, of course, you know, if you're getting to a Leinster final or a Munster final and your Tony Kelly is missing, you know, or your own Cody's missing, of course you're going to say, right, does it weaken us enough to be beaten? But that's a different conversation than saying, well, do we function? Where do we get scores from? Because, you know, Lee Chin, up until going off last week, got the first three scores after 23 minutes. You know, there was no one really else showing up. Now, Seamus Byrne showed up after that, or Seamus Casey showed up after that. But, like, there was just a case of Wexford shouldn't be relying on Lee Chin across the board, and the players, be it the newer players coming on, granted there's other players missing as well, some established players, they should be looking at it going, well, lads, okay, Lee Chin will go out and he'll hurl really well any day he goes out and he'll perform and he'll contribute to the scoreboard, but there's days we may not have him. So now is an opportunity for those players to go, right, well, we've actually performed quite well so far, okay, you know, staggered and stuttered against Offaly, you know, played well against Clare, played well against Kilkenny. You should be going, right, there's nothing to say that we can't maintain that form even though Lee Chin isn't there. So it's an opportunity for someone else to step up maybe and take the freeze, build a bit of confidence there. It's an opportunity for other people also to stand up in the forwards and be the focal point of the forwards and also be the kind of, I suppose, the fella calling the shots up there as well. So it is disappointing, but if you're to lose Lee Chin at any part of the year, you might as well lose him now. It's a little bit of a niggle injury. I would say, to be honest, if they were in a rush and there was matches coming up, they'd probably have him back on the pitch in 3 weeks. You know, it's just that because now is the time where you're going, well, okay, obviously every team at the moment is to an extent heavy-legged because they're doing a lot of work. And if any injury creeps in, you're going to see it across every team that if any little bit of an injury even pops in this weekend and it's a niggle injury, it's not that serious, that player most likely won't be involved for the rest of the league because, again, the mindset is already thinking about championship. Like, we're all looking at the next league matches, but there's elements of each county panel is looking at championship and they're going, well, we don't need to risk these players. So, look, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world by any means for Wexford. It's an opportunity, if anything else, for other players to step up. And unlike Mark Coleman down in Cork, you know, they're not going, okay, Jesus, this is a really serious injury now that, yeah, you know, could affect the season.
Yeah. Skell, to pick up the Coleman point. Oh, go on, do you go first?
I was going to ask Murphy a question. You were on about the Wexford for big players come back. Look, there are some big players come back, but do you not think that, like, this is going to sound bad now, but they need to put some reliance on some of the youth as well.
Oh, yeah, completely.
What has happened to say in the last, because off my memory now, I'm open to correction here, but since Galway entered the Leinster Championship, Wexford have only contested two finals. Would that be right?
2019 and
17, as far as I can remember. Or is it 18? No, it was 17, yeah, because the year we bet the Leinster final, but I don't remember them ever being in the Leinster final before that. And that return is extremely low, isn't it, for a group as good a hurling county as Wexford. So I'm looking at them thinking, if you have a new manager, yes, you want to kind of keep some sort of, you know, familiarity, if you know what I mean, with the players, but you need to introduce some new guys. You have to, because what has happened in the past, unfortunately, you know, hasn't cut the mustard. So you need to go a different direction.
Yeah.
I think anyway.
I can fact check this while you're conversing in the background.
I
think they might have been in three.
I thought their Leinster final in 2017 was their first in like 10 years, if memory serves me correctly.
I'll tell you now in a second. So, yeah.
And then in 19, yeah, they won in 19. They beat yourselves, Murph, was it? No. Did they? Yeah.
19, yeah, they beat us, yeah.
So, your memory is pretty good. 2017 was their first final since they were beaten in 2008. And then they won in 2019, and they haven't been back to the final since.
Yeah. Because there was Dublin and Kilkenny in 20, wasn't it, Murph?
20, yeah.
Dublin, and then yeah. 21, 22, 23
20 was that not the COVID final?
That was the COVID year.
Galway, that was the one Richie Hogan scored the goal in.
That's right, 20, yeah. 19 was off, yeah. That was 20. And then 21, 22, yeah, you're right. 23, it was 4 in a row.
Last two have been Kilkenny, Galway, Dublin before that, and Galway in, sorry, it was Galway 2020, 21 was Dublin, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Cool. That's, when you think about it, right? So that Wexford team obviously was building on the team they got from All Ireland under 20. I think it was still 21 when they got to the final. And since then, where that generation seemed primed to kick to the next level when they played so well against Tip in the All Ireland semi final, like, you can't see it as anything but a disappointment, Skell, not to have got back to another provincial final in the 5 years since.
Oh, like, I think it's a huge disappointment. And like, I look at this from a Galway perspective, looking at our own Leinster final record in the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm saying it's a huge disappointment. So from Wexford perspective, you have to say, like, not to even contest one, that's a big disappointment, because you're looking at the group they have. And in fairness, like, you go up through the middle, like, with, you know, Ryan, Hanlon, Foley, Reck, Shin, McTonald, you know, like, they're fair players, you know what I mean? And like, but just, I think they'd look back and go, like, did we do enough? Do you know what I mean? Or did we win enough? And look, I have that regret myself in my own career, but I think when you look at the group they had, certainly they look back with disappointment. I think the 19 semi-final against Tipperary is one that they'll certainly look at and go, geez, that was one that left us. You know what I mean? But I just think they need to probably find a mix. Blood new guys, give them a chance, you know, persevere to a certain degree with them, because there will be ups and downs when you introduce youth, and go from there. Try build something new afresh. Even the under-20 team that got beaten by after last year, pluck a few of them lads, throw them in, and let's just go after it. You know what I mean? And it might take a year or two. You might have to sacrifice a year or two in contesting. And who knows what might come in year three. So I think probably Wexford will probably have to have a little bit of patience with their own man. Because this is the process he has to go about, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Coleman then. Like, this is a horrific look for him. So he just kind of been coming back over the last couple of rounds. Had missed, of course, that knee injury the whole 2023 season, and he was captain a couple of years ago of the county team. And it's just kind of, he was a sub in the game, which was the loss against Kilkenny, and then he played against Waterford the Sunday just gone by. Then Cork go off on a training camp. I think it was, they might have been in Dingle across the weekend. And obviously he's got injured by one of his own players. It looks like he's going to be out for a couple of months with this broken jaw. And I would think as well, when you have a broken jaw, that must be a very difficult injury to come back from, where you're going to be taking a lot of contact as well.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's a very tough one. I've only heard previously of other players, like I think Canning had one, was it back around 2006 or 7, in a club match, I think, didn't Joe Canning break his jaw? And I don't know if many more players. I'm fairly sure he did. Well, not to be getting off topic here now, we can revisit that.
I'll fact check this one as well.
But Mark Coleman, it's very unfortunate. Like, you know, one of those injuries in your career is bad luck, you know, and you can't view it any other way. It's very disappointed. But, you know, to be getting back in, to be starting playing for Cork, and then to get an injury like this in your own training as well, you know, it's just... It's terrible luck for a player who, you know, the whole country wants to see him playing. He's a very unique player. He's, you know, on his day, he's capable of making any team in the country. He's just an exceptional player. So for him, you know, to be just back, getting back into the swing of things, and then to receive such an injury like this that just makes day-to-day life really tough. I mean, you know, this isn't just like a really bad pulled hamstring. This is like, you know, eating now for the next while, or if he can eat for the next while, all these things. You know, it's just a terrible injury to get, but it's a real blow for the Cork panel as well. Like, you know, to get him back was going to be huge for the dressing room, and huge option to have there as well. So it's look, very disappointing for him.
Yeah. That facial injury, by the way, Scale, that Joe Canning picked up was the county final in 2006. So
great. He got there the day he got stood on.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how long the recovery was afterwards, because that had happened in club season, but there you go.
Was it right? That was a broken jaw, wasn't it?
I don't think so much. I think it was more abrasions.
I think so, yeah.
And a bit of a nose, let's call it a reline.
It's down as a facial injury here in the match report.
Yeah, it was a nasty one at the time. I remember seeing it live. Not great.
I remember giving an interview anyway. I think he said he had to eat through a tube or something for like a week or two or something like that. That's just my memory of it at the time.
Yeah. I reckon he drank enough anyway.
A disparaging comment.
Incredibly disparaging comment. One that could be used against you in the future, but someone will clip that up, no doubt. But yeah, look, I suppose he's going to be out now for a while. And it's one of those things. I think Coleman is one of those players that the Cork actually needs, Gal.
Remember when he was playing at wing-back, let's say, right? He was one of those players that could, even for his size, he could contest high ball. He can go forward, two-siders, was a great link man, had pace, could man mark, and was great to set pieces. That's an awful lot of good positives you have in the wing back nowadays game. And I think the way the game is nowadays, it suits him. It suits his game more than what it did when he first got into the scene, if you know what I mean. It's more, you know, you see now today is a very sharp pass and it's very go forward running game. And like, I had earmarked him as a guy that I was going to watch this year on the return of his on the back of his return of his injury. So I was sorry to see him get injured, because you know yourself, it's nearly heartbreaking, and it's mentally very taxing that when you get a long-term injury and you're itching to get back, and you get back, you know what I mean? And you start getting into kind of the rhythm of getting into a team, getting used to the pace of hurling again, and then you hit a setback again. You know, it's very mentally hard to take. Like, and obviously he'd have support with teammates and whatnot, but thankfully it's not like an ACL injury or a dislocated shoulder, etc., whereby he'll return in, I'm guessing here, probably, you know, 8 or 9 weeks or so. But it will be tricky wearing a helmet where the strap is tight, you know, itself. Yep. It'll be kind of discomfort, but and if he ships a knock or two. But look, I hope to see him back. I want to see him in the championship this year.
Mm. There's an obvious jumping off point here, Murph. What's the worst injury you had during your career?
Oh, I've been very lucky, I suppose. Well, is that the right word? I suppose, yeah. I've only done like kind of one of the worst ones I had was against Dublin in Portlaoise in 2013, the first match where we drew it. I went to block Danny Sutcliffe, I think it was, but when I planted my foot to block it, he put his foot through my ankle. But now I didn't break anything, it just did all the ligaments. But like, that was, now in terms of pain in the moment, that was a rough one. Did my AC joint then against Offaly back in 2016, I think it was. The AC joint is a terrible one to do, because very frustrating. So like, obviously, look, I mean, your shoulder is just, you have very limited movement in your shoulder in terms of what you can do, but you could get it back to about 90%. And I remember went out to puck around before the Clare game in the league in 2016. About a week previous, and Brian just told me to go out and said, look, see how you are. And, you know, I remember just going to puck a ball, and it goes from 90% back to about 70 or 65 or, you know, percent in one puck of a ball. You suddenly lose power. So you kind of, it's one of those ones where, even when it's feeling like, oh, it's just about right, if you go out and you could poke on it, the shoulder could just drop again. And you have to set yourself back another week. So unlike where I've done hamstrings previously, you know, if a hamstring is telling you it's good, it's good. You know, there's no kind of trickery there. I always found the AC joint was just a bad one there. I was away from hurling, I was concussed. That was probably the worst one I got. But in terms of hurling-wise,
Should I ask how you got concussed away from hurling?
I was on goal in a soccer match when I was...
Of course you were. Of course you were.
Yeah, and I went out, a lad was coming running in one-on-one, and I went running out, and I was brave, I spread myself, and I flicked the ball away, and he kicked where the ball was, and that was now where my chin was. Oh. So he kicked me, and just, I remember opening my eyes, and it was just... black. I was like, you know, like a television trying to, that was actually the memory I'd have at the time, like, you know, when a television has no signal, it's just fuzzy. Yes.
Blurry, yeah. And fuzzy, yeah,
you know, like, so yeah, that was when I got concussed. And that was, you know, proper concussion in terms of like not knowing where you were and stuff, like, so it's like, I mean, when you look back on it, like, obviously concussions are at the moment people are very sensitive for them, and they keep an eye out for them, and they know all the signs. But like, I mean, you go back when I was playing soccer, maybe around 10 or 11, like, it wasn't really that huge of a thing. Like, you know, lads get hit in the head around then. I would have had friends who played rugby and different things, and, you know, it's come a long way in that time. So, but I remember, like, yeah, just played on the match and went home. Like, I only told my mum lately about this, like, because I was like, at the time, I was like, oh, you know, just sure, get on with it. Like, you know, I was knocked out. And about a year ago, I said it to mom. She was like, what do you mean you're knocked out? I said, remember that time I got knocked out in that soccer match? She was like, no. I said, yeah, I just got completely knocked out there in a match. We're actually playing a team, Evergreen is the name of the team in Kilkenny. They're one of the best soccer teams in Kilkenny. Yeah. But, got knocked out against them. And mom was like, how did you not tell me? When I was like, I walked into the house. So I only just thinking back now, when I was 11 years of age, I'd say, walk back into my mom's house. She not knowing I'd been knocked out about 2 hours previously, which is crazy, like, when you think about it now, like, but yeah, it was just the times that it were, I don't know.
Yeah. Evergreen, the former home of Shawnee Maguire, Leash hurler, yeah. Ross King played for them as well. Shane Keegan even, who will pop up and off the ball from time to time. He's managing in Tipperary in hurling this year. So yeah. I guess he's, you know, he, by his own admission, he's a hurling man who became a League of Ireland manager. So I think he's got a pass to be either side of the fence on this one. Skell, I know you've done the shoulders and a few bits and pieces along the way. What's the worst you had?
I've had a few injuries now. Probably pain with the shoulders is definitely up there with the pain, for sure. Like that replay morph, I dislocated on the Friday and played the Sunday. That wasn't a smart decision, to be honest. That was a sore one. But I tell you what was really sore. I played a rugby game and I tore the muscle at the back of my neck here from the school there.
Oh.
Yeah. That Jesus, was kind of, yeah, a scrum collapsed, and I went down with it, and the weight came up. And I got up thinking, that's, something's not right there. Do you know what I mean? But I was warm, yeah.
Where were you? Were you a back row forward, or did you play a second row?
This was second row days. Right. The older I got, then I went into the back row. Right. But I was warm. If you're during a warm, you don't really feel the pain as much. Then rugby is very kind of break, obviously. So I remember going over to line out going, fuck, my neck is, I can't lift my neck. Do you know what I mean? My head is like this. I can't lift up. Anyways, ended up in a stretcher, ended up in Limerick Hospital. I had to get an injection to the back of my neck to fuse it up again.
Fuck.
that wasn't ideal. That was a sore one, though. Yeah, that was a sore one. Not when it happened, it was like, that hurt. But then as the time went on,
But there's some of them muscle ones that, like, in the moment, you feel it's like hot water or something pouring down your neck, or you feel a bit of a
heat.
It's gone. But then when it cools down and it's cold, you suddenly like, oh, Jesus. Yeah. So that
was a dirty one. Another day, I dislocated my clavicle up here, playing rugby as well.
And that one, I'm to laugh at you. How did you? I've never heard of anyone doing either of these injuries before.
Yeah, dislocated clavicle. That was a sore one. Like this one here.
Is the clavicle? Is that the collarbone?
It's there, joins your sternum there. Yeah. So
okay,
that was just hitting. I actually tackled a big flipping Samoan fella. Ran into him as hard as I could hit him. Like, and we kind of both, we all fell together and he landed on top of me. And I felt something go, that's not right. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and then this is when I'm playing the back row days. Then I went into the scrum, hit the scrum and go, oh fuck, something isn't right with that. I just walked off. Ended up at the Galway clinic, dislocated clavicle. But they go back in by themselves.
Do they?
Yeah, it goes back in by itself. I didn't know that until I got to the clinic. A big lump here. He goes, yeah, that's gone back in. It's mushed in the scrum. Put it back in.
You look like a bluffer then. You look like there's nothing wrong with you.
I remember Grace is there. Like I said, Grace, we need to go nanny.
Yeah.
Joe, you get some injuries, you go, yeah, this is kind of serious. So yeah, let's just go to A&E, Grace. Let's head off.
I did actually, another one I thought of there, just there now, the bar came off the helmet and went into my hand one of the times. So we're training up at Carton House. It was 2011. And I remember at halftime in the game, I looked at the face guard of the helmet. It was a reasonably new helmet as well. Looked at the face guard and the weld, the top of the bar had come away from the weld. And I was like, I looked at it and said, geez, that's not great. I may sort that after the training session. And a ball lands in. Myself and Mark Bergen went up for a ball and landed in. And my hand came down onto my helmet. And I felt it straight away and went, oh, Jesus. And so I just turned and just walked off. I walked off over the end line. And I just showed it to the doctor. And I was like, oh, Christ, here we go. But what was funny then was Brian, the following day, I got it stitched up. And I suppose Brian was testing me, being a new player on the panel. And like, obviously, it stitches all up through my thumb after getting stitched. But we had another training match the following day. And Brian said, how are you? And like, my thumb was all gauze and stitches. I said, it's all right. Like, do you know, as your player, you're keeping your cards close to your chest. You're like, oh, yeah, it's all right. Like, Leinster final in 2 weeks or something. And he was like, you all right to train this afternoon? So, and I was looking at him, and Martin Fogarty was standing there, and Mick Dempsey, and I went, I am, yeah. He goes, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'm fine. And Brian was like, if you walk out in that pitch with that hand, I'll drop you. But he wanted to see what the answer was. But about a week later then, when I was out, and the stitches only stayed in for about, I'd say, maybe 5 days or a week or something. But he took them out, and I was poking with Colin Fenley across the field. This was the... and maybe the Friday or the Tuesday before the Leinster final. And Colin was pucking the ball across. And I could just see Colin looking kind of at me across the pitch, but maybe just past me anyway. And I had a little look around, but I couldn't see what was happening. So I seen Colin strikes the ball up really high. And sure, I caught it anyway and struck it back to him. And I seen Colin keep striking these really high balls. I was like, why is he striking really high balls? Like, he's just completely stopped striking the ball to me. He's just striking it up high. And Cody was behind him just saying to Colin, do this, put up, make him catch it. And every time he just kept going. So he wanted to see, would I just keep catching to make sure the hand was all right? Yeah, well, he just stood behind him and Colin was there looking across the field and Brian was just kept going like that. Landing the ball down.
Because I was wondering, Paul, whether Cody was kind of secretly delighted that you went, you don't know, I'll train. Even if there's a risk of me actually re-injuring this, I'll go back out. That's exactly the answer he wanted.
Yeah, it was. Like, I mean, like I was kind of going, genuinely at the time, though, I was kind of saying, is this what's expected? In my own head, I'm thinking, is this what's expected of players? So I was like, yeah, grand, I'll go out. And I probably would have went out there and just went, right, I'll go for it. But he wanted to see, because we'd had conversations maybe earlier in the year, he wanted to see, I suppose, just test it, just to see what is it like. You know, is this the line where you stop, like, or do you keep going again? Like, obviously, he was never going to let me go out. But for a young player, you're standing there going, yeah, that's fine. I'll go out in the pitch there with the stitches in my hand here in the bar that was only removed.
Bloody hell, right. That's not to be advised. But there you go. The guy's worst injuries there. There's a couple of other ones that I just kind of wanted to quickly address the comments that come in. We started on a wonderful run of getting into all the comments. And then, of course, naturally, we got distracted. Tan97 was in contact as well. I know he tweeted me about this as well. About, we were talking about the Jack O'Connor, David King incident, whereby initially there was a red card shown to Jack O'Connor. Jack O'Connor then went for pretty much his last minute appeal just before the weekend gone by, and he was cleared and David King then got a suspension. So the point that Tan97 is making, lads, could you address the issue of the helmet grabs from the referee's point of view? He made a call on the day to send off O'Connor but had missed the King grab. The fact is that regardless of hair splitting, the rule is grabbing the face guard is a red. Again, I don't disagree here. For the GAA to then suspend King correctly but exonerate O'Connor, who committed the same events, completely undermines the referee. Which, I think there's a fair point in there, Skell, in that, so there is a black and white rule here. And even if we looked at it, I think, very much from a player's perspective, and we talked about this last week, which was two guys are grabbing each other. We thought no card for either. But from the referee's perspective, as Tan is pointing out here, he sees Jack O'Connor's hand go onto David King's helmet. That's his view of the incident. He gives the red card. It goes to appeal. And in a way, he's almost been double undermined here, whereby they have now decided that he didn't take correct action on David King, who was doing the initial pulling. And also, they've ruled that there wasn't... I think the infraction wasn't proven was the exact word in the use. So basically, there wasn't enough there to merit red card, despite the fact that O'Connor's hand does go onto his face guard. So in a way, the referee has kind of been, I suppose, undermined twice here.
Yeah, and we did acknowledge also that it's a tricky situation for the referee, because if he's to adopt the letter of the law, yes, it's a red card for both. But like, we go back to our conversation last week and we said, why was the rule actually brought in? And it was brought in for excessive grabbing of the helmet, where people were pulling face guards, you know, nearly distorting people's necks. And it was a real risk of injury and dangerous activity when associated with the neck. So we're coming from a player's perspective and we're saying, right, these kind of challenges are innocuous enough. There's no real severity of injury. There's no real, intent, if you know what I mean. It's handbags, if you like. It's contesting a high ball under, you know, stressful circumstances whereby you're just resting. So I would like to see if this is the case where the wording is, you know, changed somewhat to kind of protect the referee, that when this incident happens again, he doesn't have to banish red cards to people. Obviously, when a situation happens where a guy grabs your face guard frontal on and pulls hard, yeah, Carter Jarrett, simple as that. But in this instance, it's very hard for me to stand here as an ex-player and say, yeah, they both deserve red cards. And I know the intent wasn't greatly there. The action, you know, wasn't very forceful. And the outcome, both players were fine. They could have carried on quite easily. You know, and if you ask both of them, they've done the same thing as well. It's the same with the striking action, where, like, you know, I think there's wording in the rule book that protects referees, you know, when it comes to layers of striking. You know, if I was walking past you and I just tapped you on the ass with the hurl, you know, in this same instance, right, that's a striking action, but the wording is protected where it causes injury, harm, you know, or let's say an act of aggressiveness, whereas the helmet is only if he grabs the helmet. You know what I mean? There's no real protection for the referee. So I just think if we can introduce some wording and just kind of change the dialogue somewhat whereby, you know, the ref can make a conscious decision because the wording there protects him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think that's logical. I think if you ask any player, whether past or present, they'll say the same thing. You know, I think we look at a lot of these incidents and go, yeah, that wasn't dangerous. But there is the odd one, for sure. Like when a Malik occurs or something like that, there is the odd one that is dangerous and that does deserve a red card. But certainly, 9/10 of them I see nowadays, they don't deserve it.
Yeah. By the way, taking Tan 97 point here, at least my take on it would be, I would agree with him in that it is a black and white red card offence. The referee has applied the rules as they've seen it on the pitch. And obviously somebody at the appeals has seen it differently to the referee. And then as a referee, you might be scratching your head going, I took action the way I thought I should take it. And you've now ruled that my decision was wrong.
Yeah.
So Castle Long had asked, are Offaly actually getting back to the big boys table? Or are the opposition putting out a bit of a weaker team versus Offaly during the league? It's a difficult one to answer, and I've watched their first three games since they went back up to Division 1, because like, Offaly aren't obviously deciding the effort levels or the teams that are being picked against them right now. Mm. What we've seen from Offaly was very good intent, very good effort in particularly the Wexford and Kilkenny games. But I'd be the first one, Paul, who would take Derek Ling's point, where he's left scratching his head a little bit about the sloppiness from Kilkenny in the first half of that game particularly. And that's not something that really... you can judge awfully on a whole lot, but there is probably that nagging feeling at the back of your mind, which is that if Kilkenny are sharper, Kilkenny do what they did in the third quarter and don't maybe hurl the way they did in the first half. I don't know whether that was down to complacency or what that was down to, but you don't see Kilkenny very often drop the amount of passes that were happening, catches, sloppy shots that were happening in the first half. You kind of have to take all this into an equation. So you can praise what Offaly have done so far, but also accept that it was a miserable night in Wexford. Wexford didn't hurl all that well in that game. Kilkenny didn't hurl well in the first half. But you can't really use that as a stick to beat them with either.
No, but I think the big point we have to remind ourselves here is that when we're saying return to the big table or the top table, it's not an immediate automatic, you're straight back in and now you're competing. It's a gradual one where you start to show indicators that you're heading back in the right direction. The indicator for me is that there was disappointment there with how they performed against Watford, that it didn't give them enough of a go, how the Stephen Bennett both goals went in, I suppose. But then when you go against against Wexford, let's say in Wexford Park, what I would say about that is I think Wexford were a little bit off the pace, granted, yeah, but Offaly went at them in a very structured way and had really good play to their game. They created opportunities, they took good points, they created a goal when they needed a goal. Against Kilkenny, they didn't hang around and wait for Kilkenny. They went and took the game to Kilkenny and were flying it and were causing problems for Kilkenny as well. You know, Charlie Mitchell had a great game in a corner forward. And those, again, you're looking for individual players like Killian Kiley as well. Like, he's hurling really well as well. So you're looking for those, Ben Keneally. You look for all these lads and you're like, okay, well, there's a team, there's individual players, and of course Adam Screeny, but like, there's individual players you can start building a team around. So I think those are the markers that people are looking for. And you match that then with their underage teams that are coming through. And that's why we're forecasting to say, okay, I think Offaly are actually headed back in the right direction. Oftentimes we sit here with talk about counties and we say the markers as to why they're heading away and they're not coming in the right direction. And we'll, I'm sure we'll talk about Dublin now or, you know, in the members pod. But, you know, for Offaly at the moment, they, like, exactly like you said, they can't affect what the other team are doing in terms of how the other team arrive to the game. Offaly can only look after themselves. And they've shown enough for us to get excited and say, brilliant, like, they are heading the right direction. Now, one thing I'd say about Offaly is that you can see when it comes to the summertime and the ball starts moving that bit quicker, you know, they'll feel a bit more pressure then again. Also, what I see is, you know, when I looked at the Tipperary game last year, you know, the size difference of that, the Tipperary lads, you know, just had that bit more condition and physically looked like a bigger team. So those are things that they're going to have to improve on. But I would say that, you know, I'd remind everyone that when we talk of a return to the top table, it's a gradual process. It'll take a few years, but that the markers and the indicators are there that they are headed in the right direction. And like, they've great structure going on behind the scenes as well. You know, of course, Shane Lowry and Dignan, like, you know, they're doing a lot of good stuff there. So when I suppose people ask us or people say, like, you know, are they back? Well, we're not saying they're back yet, but we're saying that they're heading in the right direction and they're going to cause problems for people now over the next few years. And if teams don't treat them with respect, they will get caught with them. And they're showing us that they're willing to go at teams. So that's, I think I probably speak for all of us there saying that that's where we see Offaly at the moment.
Yeah, like, I look, again, I would hope, I try to be reasonable on these things. I'm pretty sure it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, Skell and I had a bit of a back and forth and we were talking about, like, what does, like, the next few years look like for Offaly? And I was saying it's not going to be contesting Leinster finals. It's getting back into the Leinster Championship and kind of building up the ladder over the next 4 or 5 years, as opposed to looking at this as in, oh, look, they're back in Division 1, so therefore they're going to win the Joe McDonagh this summer. I think the Joe McDonagh is going to be an absolute shark tank to try and get out of this year. It's going to be incredibly difficult with the way some of the teams are playing. Like, Carlow are heading back to Division 1. Westmeath, equally, with some of their main players not been around, have performed well in Division 1 so far this year. It's going to be really, really difficult for teams to come out. So I think when you say Offaly back at the top table, for me, that means Offaly back inside the top 11 teams in the country and contesting in the Leinster Championship. Not contesting to win it, but actually back in it would be the way I consider that. So there we go. We shall see what happens. Only time will tell. And Offaly, you've got two difficult games to finish out the league as well. They've got Cork and Clare coming up over the last couple of weeks. Two home games. One is in Burham, one is in Tullamore, I think, over the next couple of weeks. So a couple of other bits and pieces. We're going to preview all the games on the members pod, by the way, and we will have a chat about Dublin and whether they are hurling's great underachievers or not, because a few people were, including Shane Dowling, were bringing that up over the last week, and Neil McManus. Shane Power 2423, who is coming back with less a question, more of a statement. Thanks for answering the questions last week, lads. That was about Waterford and their ambitions. Skell's reaction to smashing the glass is exactly my reaction to watching us in Waterford brackets there playing right now. There's no attacking threat, no excitement, nothing to look forward to. It's like we're playing without a centre back and full forward, which is extremely worrying as well. So that's Shane Power, Waterford fan, and his impression of it. And I feel for you if broken glass is the feeling you have watching your team at the moment. Fiol was saying as well, what would Munster Rugby give for the Limerick half back line? I'll tell you, they would have given quite a bit for them back in December when they had 20 odd players out at the time. Limerick are building some right specimens of athletes that would definitely be able to cross over like Skell and play a bit of rugby at the moment as well. We addressed the Cork criticism. And the last one that I wanted to touch on, Skell, before we head towards the members pod for this week, comes in from Mikkel 8998. Question for Skell for the next pod. Who should start in goal for Galway, Derek Fahey or Aina Murphy? Seem to be going with Fahey, who I would rate as a better shot stopper and calmer, while Murphy probably is a better puck out. I would go with Fahey. Murphy is a bit more accident prone. Not overly different situation to himself and Callanan back in the day, both strong in some points and weaker in other parts. So that's Mikkel's assessment of your two goalkeepers at the moment. What's your assessment of them?
Yeah, I do think Derek Fahey is a better shot stopper. I think he's better in general play. I'd have told him to straight to his face. I think Aidan Murphy has a better strike in terms of puck out range. But overall, rule number one for me is always the goalkeeper to stop the ball. So I think Henry Sheffield and his guys are looking at probably different avenues to try and improve the team. And look, there was an awful emphasis put on striking and ball to Hennessy in terms of puck out last year. And I think there was a couple of errors on Aidan's behalf, which he put his hand up to. That probably mightn't happen for Derek. And he's had a very, very solid league campaign. And it looks like he's had a run of games, which is a sure sign, you know, that they're going to probably persist. So I think, as evidence right now, I'd probably have Derek in goals. He did have a fantastic club campaign where he was doing both scoring and stopping. So I think he probably deserves, on form and through the way he's operated, to be in. And like, people forget that when in 2021, I think it was 2021, where Watford beat Galway down in Thurles, Aina got COVID and Derek was in goals. Derek was excellent at that day. Brilliant. Made some great saves, you know, in terms of shot stopping. So I think probably Sheffield's looking at it going, right, can we stop the ball and play out from the back and go from there? You know, so it's probably a chance taken on his behalf, because Aina has been in goals for the last four seasons. So it's one where I think if Sheffield goes with it, that he has to, you know, it's live or die, I think, at this stage.
I guess a bit like Arsenal, you have to kind of make a decision. You can even say at the moment we've got two great goalkeepers. I remember this early in the year, it was Ramsdale or Raya, and we'll see, some might play some games, etc., etc. And it was very clear that Raya was actually the first choice and that he was going to back him over Ramsdale. So the follow-up question to that, and we'll finish up the Monday pod on that, what were Callanan's strengths and your weaknesses? Or because the commenter was too kind to actually say what they were or not. So if you were rating yourself and Callanan, what was good, what was bad on both of you?
What was good, what was bad? I suppose I was, Cullen was very calm, if you know what, that's his character anyway, where he'd be very kind of a relaxed type of person. I'm the opposite. What would you call it? I gather that. Thanks, Will.
Antithesis.
I was going to say hyper. You know what I mean? in terms of shot-stopping ability, I wouldn't have much difference. In fielding ability, I wouldn't have much difference. Poke out would probably get him on range. But there was, you're kind of splitting hairs when you get to this level, I think. But I think probably it's kind of a bit similar to the two boys. You know, Aina can be a bit hyper as well. But Derek comes across as, like, Derek works with me, I should say, right, in one of my sites, and he's almost horizontal. He's so calm. Do you know what I mean? I often say if the apocalypse was happening, he'd be eating popcorn. Do you know what I mean? Watching it, like, that's the way he is as a person. Do you know what I mean? So there's striking similarities between those two boys now and myself, another lad back in the day. But I don't think an awful lot changes other than that. No, that's it. Maybe size. That's it. Kevin is a midget.
Hold on. Was he not the guy who, like, basically got you into that ridiculous shape that we threw up on screen once upon a time?
Yeah, but sure, he didn't get himself in that shape. Now, me and Kendall are great friends, like, so I can call him whatever I want. But fairness, yeah. No, he got a Calvi. Calvi about 5'9 or 5'10. Yeah. 6'5 and he's much more relaxed, yeah. But I came back from America that time, and I was, let's just say, I was large, Will. Like, large in a bad way. Mm. So I wasn't even me going to him, it was him going to me going, hey, lad, we need to sort you out.
Simple as that. And dare I ask, what kind of work did he do with you? I mean, like, you put on a lot of lean muscle, obviously, at the time. We saw the pictures.
Yeah, it was 12 weeks. I was actually talking to someone about this recently. I was talking to someone about, let's say, what it's like now going up in the years on the body and how I can't train as much, obviously. But back then, it was... it was 5, 6 a.m. gym sessions a week, Monday through Friday. It was one session of sprints and then the Galway train on top of it. Right. So there was in essence around 10, if not 11 sessions per week.
Jesus.
Which for 12 weeks, which I can tell you here now, was completely unsustainable. And the diet was so, oh my God, the diet was terrible. For 6 weeks straight, 6 weeks now in phase two, which towards the last six, I ate fish and green vegetables for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Ah, Jesus.
Nice. Yeah, it's not workable over a longer period of time.
I haven't had asparagus since. Yeah, I can't look at it. Can't look at it. You know what I mean? Or even white fish. If it's, I can't look at it. I've had it so much every day. It was pre-prepared, and I just got so sick of it. Now, you get lean. You're ripped. And I just can't. but just so like no energy, and you know, just not for me. I nowadays I train to eat. It's that simple. I like my food, you know, so I'll train 3 or 4 times a week, no problem, so I can eat whatever the hell I want.
Did it improve your hurling though?
Did it improve my hurling? It got to a stage whereby I was very low on body fat, but I was just so big in muscle, you know what I mean, that I was not for hurling whatsoever. And I played a club game, and I remember a penalty was being taken on me, and I tried to get it, it went low to my right. I tried to get down to it, couldn't get down to it. Just couldn't get down. I was just so big. You know what I mean? I was like a back row forward again. So that was where I said, right, stop that now. And it's just, I probably over the next probably 5 or 6 weeks, I probably lost 5 kilos of muscle. Just stopped lifting weights and just started running. And then it obviously got better after that. So, but I haven't been back there since. Like that was the day, like that, I was 100 and probably, back then, what was I? I was 110 kilos, 109 kilos.
Jesus.
Yeah. Which is not sustainable for the game of hurling, lads, let me tell you here now. Like, if you look at Kyle Hayes or Gareth Hegarty, like, they're barely 100 kilos, I'd say. Barely 100 kilos. You can imagine being 22, 24 pounds heavier than them lads. So, not simple.
No, but especially when you have to spring in the goals and everything as well. It's far from ideal. Right, so what we will do is we shall leave it there for the Monday pod. For anyone who wants to stick around with us and join us for the members pod, what we're going to do is we're going to have a chat about a few bits and pieces. So we've obviously alluded already that we were having to think about what Dublin haven't achieved really in the last decade and where they're at this year and whether they're actually making progress or not. We're going to have a look forward to the games which are coming up this weekend, including the fact that now Tipperary Limerick is going to Páirc Uí. And who knows if to give it its full title, the TUS Gaelic Grounds will be ready for the game against Galway. Because if Galway have got Salt Hill in condition, that could mean the home advantage might flip over for that game. So we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks' time on that. So we'll have a chat about that as well. I'm sure other bits and pieces are going to come up along the way. But for now, lads, thanks a million.
Sound, lads.
See ya.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.